Here's what was told to me, that often the people who speak most clearly about water are the ones walking through drought. There is a particular loneliness. I feel very alone and without community. I have friends. They're scattered around the planet, but there's no one in this town. We see each other maybe twice a year. Today, we talk about how micro community quietly exists, even when it feels like you have none. So tune in. Here we go. I am Fawn.
And Matt. We're an interracial couple with two kids wanting to do something that highlights the power of friendship and what it means to be in the company of true friends. We're going to move our society away and out of the loneliness epidemic and into a friendlier, happier world. Welcome to Our Friendly World. Better, stronger, together.
Welcome back to Our Friendly World, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Friendly World. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Welcome back. So this all started when, again, I was feeling like, what am I even doing talking about friendship? Because look at me, I've become very reclusive. My work requires me to be inside in a padded room, which sounds crazy, but that's my line of work. I'm a voice actor.
Right.
And the thing is, I don't want to go out. I have to push myself to go out. And here I am talking about friendship. And I do, like I said, I do have friends and we have great conversations. You know, there's a support group, yes. But the ideal that I have been preaching about for the last few decades is not here, and I'm trying to create that. And at the same time, I do feel disillusioned. I do feel like I don't even want to do it. You know, like I don't want to see crazy Kathy outside our house. You know, I don't want to deal with her craziness.
Right.
I don't want to deal with her form of whatever she wants to throw at me. You know
and
what I'm
dragons
saying?
Dragons on the left of me, dragons on the right of me. So
exactly. So, and because I don't want to get into conflict and all of that, I'm like, you know what? I'm good. I'd rather just stay inside.
I'm good.
But that's the inertia we all have to get over, because that's not really the world. And the world is crazy. It is in upheaval. Things are changing. This is what I've been thinking about a lot lately. And I don't know if it's birthdays. It is. It is all about birthdays and stuff. It makes you think, oh my God, I have worked very carefully about being very mindful of every minute of the day, being mindful of everything the kids are going through, being present, completely present. I'm not one of those people that's constantly rushing from here to there, doing this and that. I am doing a lot, but we as parents have always been very still with our kids and with our lives, and very deliberate in what we choose to do and how we choose to do everything. When you do that, it's quite meditative and you do bend time to your will, I guess. I don't know of a better word for it right now, but time does slow down when you do that. But it hasn't. I feel, and I was talking to a friend who actually called me this morning. And the phone happened to be near me because I did wake up, but I was kind of still like in bed, like didn't want to get out because it's freezing outside and whatever. it's my birthday. And I was just like, I just want to be here. I don't want to like get up and start running around. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I just want to be thankful and just lay here for a second. I picked up the phone. I'm like, I thought I butt dialed her, right? I couldn't believe she was calling. I'm like,
it's a little early, isn't it?
And it was early for her, especially because she was in a completely different time zone. And I'm like, what are you doing up? Like, she's like, were you sleeping? I'm like, no. And I could hear my own voice, like that morning voice, like, it's not quite there yet. I'm like, no, I just, So we were talking for a little bit and I was explaining how time feels so fluid, and it's kind of like those movies where they time travel and they poke their fingers through a portal and it's like a ripple, like, time is very malleable. It seems like see-through, like a ripple. If you touch it, like, I just feel like all the dimensions are existing at the same time. And if there is a curtain to distinguish this dimension from that dimension, I think it's all coming together and it's all pliable. I don't know any other word for it. It's not just us, because she was like, oh, well, that's what happens when you get older. Time goes by faster. I'm like, no, little kids are saying this. And I'm telling this to people who are old. And they're like, oh, that's what happens when you get older. That's like that's the go-to for them. I'm like, no, you don't understand. It's not just you that's feeling this way. It's not the typical, oh, time goes by faster when you're having fun, or time goes faster when you're older. No, little kids are saying this, that you wake up, it's Monday. A few hours later, it's Friday. Like, time is going by really fast. And in some cases, it goes slow. It's just like it's warped. It's all of it at the same time, at different times, if that makes any sense. So anyway, because there's so much going on, and I was thinking about what my actions have been like, I have been in such a state of fear or trauma, getting over trauma, that I'm self-soothing. I'm eating when I'm not hungry. I was watching Stranger Things with our kids, and I started stuffing my face because it was stressing me out, you know? And then my heart started racing. So then I had to take some extra herbs to calm down. And they're like, Mom, you want to just turn it off? I'm like, no. You know, but this is my welcome to my all day, every day. Like, oh, I just have to deal with it. So, like, even getting a cup of coffee, I don't want coffee. I don't need coffee. I'm turning to the coffee to have in my hand something warm that I can hold on to, because I'm stressed out. I need some reassurance. I need something to hold on to. I need a touchstone for comfort. I need something to hold me. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
So I'm like, okay, I got to get rid of these things. I don't need it. We are unlimited. We are unlimited. We don't need these external things. We don't need to go shopping. We don't need to eat as much as we're eating. We don't need that coffee. We don't. What you do need is to ground yourself, anchor yourself within yourself, because you are from the divine. You have the spark. You have the fire of the divine in you. And that holds unlimited power, and you're unlimited. So if we can remember to turn to that first, and then go ahead and have a cup of coffee because it tastes good, you know, a little bit.
I agree. For me, I have to have wins. I love wins. Everybody loves wins, right? Wins have to be internal for me, because I can't give my, I don't want to give my power away. I don't want to give away, you are the only person who has the ability to make me feel good. No, I don't want to do that. Although, in a lot of cases, you are the only one who makes me feel good, baby. But for me, a win makes me feel a little more comfortable. And that is typically an accomplishment, which is why, of course, I have my wacky morning rituals where I actually manage to get a couple things accomplished, knock on wood, that are basically almost entirely just tied to me. Doing the laundry, that's an accomplishment I do, which isn't completely under my control because the washing machine can break, but it's basically under my control. And I'll work out in the mornings now, every morning, and that is completely under my control.
Thank you. I know, but no, and no buts. And yes, and I do want to acknowledge something, though, that there is a particular loneliness that comes from being socially attuned, but structurally unsupported, right? But what does that mean?
I was about to say, yeah, what does that mean?
It's harder for me. I'll just speak for myself, but this is what I've noticed about our society, that let me just go back just to talk about friendship, and hopefully this will be an example. But You're not isolated because you don't value friendship. You're isolated because modern systems make sustained belonging incredibly hard unless you're buffered by money, status, or institutional power. Meaning, when you feel like there's no community, there's no structure to turn to, right? Let's say you need help to raise your kid. You need help. Someone needs to watch your kid while you're giving birth to the other kid. Like, there's nobody, which was what we had, right? Nobody. And then when there is somebody, there are strangers. So it doesn't feel safe. So there's no structure. You're structurally unsupported. That's what I'm saying. Like, when you have a community like that, you have, like in other cultures, you know, they call each other aunt and uncle when they're not. You're like any other person, like a woman you meet is auntie, mm-hmm. or a man you meet is uncle within the community. You're not necessarily blood related. But there's none of that. There's been none of that that we have experienced.
And that is that's the fair statement. Because so, I think that there is that. We just haven't been fortunate enough to really stumble, frankly, upon it.
So Matt and I always talk about a documentary we saw in the early 2000s. I know a lot of you have not, weren't even born then, maybe. Okay, so here's what happened. One day I fell asleep watching TV, and then I woke up to this documentary that was on, that happened to be playing, and I woke up with such awe. I'm like, oh my goodness, everything that I've been thinking about while I've been photographing all these years, here it is. Someone did a documentary, but not on what I was thinking about. Similar is in really looking at our society and thinking about and talking about and showing examples of this caste system, especially in the United States, a caste system. I've photographed and experienced different levels of social structures. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't talk to you if you're over here, if you're in this class system, or they don't want to be associated with you if you're here. They look down on you. They talk down on you. You know, you already know the deal. I don't have to explain all this to you guys. But so I was thinking about, I always think about this documentary. It was called People Like Us. Now, it's not the movie. A movie came out. I think a couple movies have come out in the last, I don't know, 26 years. That's like with the title
definitely
People
a
like
documentary.
Us. This is a documentary that was done in 2000. And I don't remember the guys' names. I'm sorry. But I did reach out to them, by the way. When I saw it, I was so excited. They thought I was a little nuts, probably. Like, who are you, lady?
Well, in hindsight, yes, I think we absolutely were nuts.
I was. You didn't talk. I called them.
Yeah, but I was as interested as you were.
Mm. I basically tracked these guys down to say, thank you. You did such a great job. This is amazing. Our culture needs this. Like, this is what everyone needs to look at. But guess what? I don't think many people saw it.
No.
And it was such a good warning. It was so important for people to see this because they would have seen and been able to do something. And I was telling the kids, because what we did finally after all these years, we decided, you know what, let's have the kids now watch this. And then we watched it.
And it was a very different documentary than I remember.
Oh my God. Yes, because 26 years have gone by. Well, actually, no. We saw it in 2004. We saw it in 2004. So, whatever. 22 years?
And I am definitely not the same person.
I mean, we became parents. We've experienced major hardships. We've seen things. We've lived in different parts of the country.
We've seen things.
We've seen some stuff. So, yeah, I was watching it, and I had kind of the same reactions I did initially, but I was really upset with certain parts of it where I was shouting at the TV screen, like, and telling the kids, don't you ever act like that. Like I came at it from the perspective of a mother, a mother who brings about home training. Like, I always say to the kids, this person right here has no home training. This is why they behave that way. And guess what? It's one of their close friends, right? I'm like, there's no home training here. I do not appreciate how they're behaving and don't think that that's normal. So I always have to like say stuff like that to the mm-hmm. kids. Anyway, so looking back on this, I started to ask myself, what has happened with the class system in the United States since 2000? Because these warnings were not heeded. Heed as in like they weren't
listened they weren't to. Observed.
Yeah. So, and I was telling the kids, when you don't pay attention and you don't look at the signs, guess what? It will be done for you. And I always say this, when you're in a job and you know you have to leave, you have to quit, but you're too scared because yes, you have to pay the rent. Yes, yes, yes. But everything is telling you, you need to get out of here, and you don't, guess what? You will be forced out in some way. And it can be harsh. You know, if you want things less harsh, follow your instincts, follow your intellect, combine them and make changes that way. So I don't think our society did that. And so after certain huge hurricanes and after maladies that afflicted people's health and downfalls of companies like Enron, remember?
Mm-hmm.
This documentary was before Enron. Like, all of this changed things and brought things to the forefront of everything that was just accepted, not talked about.
Well, and also, I think we're also looking at much more, it was already in the process of happening, but more, what's the word? Homogeneity of culture.
Mm-hmm. Like everything was acceptable. Like, this is the way it is, right?
Yeah.
There was no no pushing back against the status quo necessarily.
But even the status quo was subtly shifting in challenging ways. Like the politician who said, yeah, I didn't pay a lot in taxes because I'm smart.
Mm-hmm.
Not because, you know, I do pay a lot in taxes. It's just less of a percentage. Not, you know, I'm doing my bit for the government. No, I'm keeping my money because I'm smart, with an inference that everyone else maybe is stupid.
But speaking of said politician, I mean, that's why he has become so popular and is leading, is because there was a certain class that was constantly ignored. So in the documentary, for example, they talk about food and bread. Who eats what kind of bread? And that'll show you what class system that you have fallen into. Right?
What
Wonder
your class
bread
is.
As opposed to like dark,
organic, crusty.
Crusty, like dark bread. Like what's a dark bread? Like those European dark breads.
Like a brown bread, like a pumpernickel, like a...
No, it's something else. Anyway, they're really brown and, you know, they're not...
Are you thinking batard? And
I don't know. Those are like in between. They're still white. But, you know, like it's... All these are clues,
They're indefinite indicators.
And
food is a big indicator of class.
They went to this one town, the documentary, and the fight was the big grocery store...
A big grocery store had packed up and left, and... They wanted to fill that space with another grocery store, and they wanted the people to vote, you know, who do you want to fill the space?
And so the people that were health conscious and the middle class, they were like, let's bring in a co-op. When you're watching this, you can see aspects of yourself. So for me, I used to live in Seattle and I belonged to a co-op. And what it is it's a grocery store. It's all health food. It's mostly all fresh vegetables and fruit, you know. Everything is owned by the customer. So you own a percentage of the grocery store and you vote, and it's like a co-share. Anyway, so that was trying to come in and the people were so upset. And when I was first watching this 20 something years ago,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my God, look at them. They're so upset. They don't understand.
The food will be so much healthier and better for them.
Yeah, because obviously I can see they're dealing with health challenges, right? But then what the documentary was pointing out was these people were the ones that have always been marginalized, made fun of, not included. And the same people who did that to them, who mistreated them, are the ones now who are like saying, we're going to bring in this grocery store. This is what we're going to eat.
And that's because the last time, really, if you think about it, the last time you maybe mixed with the different classes was when you were in a public high school.
Right. Yeah. And that's what they said. That was the last time they had to deal with this. Right. And then so this is being forced on them, feeling like they have no say. Anyway, it's really a huge issue. We can talk for hours and hours about it. And that's not where I necessarily want to focus today, because I want to bring it back to friendship and how we relate to one another and just the whole feeling of loneliness and being separated from and falling in the cracks of things. Like, you don't fall into this class or this class, you're in the cracks, not fitting into anything.
Right. But I want to briefly just go back to that and say, I think the big issue there was they were again seeing the popular kids, the smart kids, the athletes, the whatevers, trying to tell them what to do. Mm-hmm. And that was the problem. They weren't being listened to. Mm-hmm. They weren't being empathized with. They were being told.
Yeah, they weren't asked, well, what do you like to eat? What would you like to eat? No.
They just assumed that they wanted white bread and they wanted meat. And so they were like, we can bring in 99-cent bread. And they ran to solutioning before they actually heard the people tell them what the real problems were.
And we all know assume makes an ASS out of you and me.
And rushing to solutioning is a problem too.
So going back to the, like, I wanted to talk about what's changed here. Mm-hmm. Because in the early 2000s, there were clearer cultural signals, more local identity, and slightly more mobility myths that people still believed in. And since then, the class system hasn't, because I was wondering, has it disappeared or how has it been muted or something's different? Someone said it has hardened and gone underground. And then
I would argue it's hardened and become just the way things are. And it feels like there's a lot less mobility.
I think underground is perfect because, like, let's say the rich. They showed the rich people in this documentary. And you seriously, I mean, first of all, now that I'm older and I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, this documentary was done by these guys who are obviously angry with the rich people.
Eat the rich.
They were angry.
I know.
I didn't notice that the first time I watched it.
Oh, I totally did.
You did?
I did.
I didn't at all. I'm like, oh, this guy has rage. Like, he was at Sur Le Table holding a vegetable peeler. He's like, what even is this? You know, I'm like, dude, it's a vegetable peeler. But back in the day when I first watched it, I'm like, I didn't look to see what he was holding. I was just listening to what he was saying, which mm-hmm. is, oh, if you have this, this lets you know that you're better than somebody else because you know how to use this and put it in this backpack to use with your, you know, white truffle sauce or whatever it is, you know, like... Which I'm translating because there was an Italian word for it. And he was like, who even knows what this is? I'm like, hello, it's Italian. Learn to speak other languages. But hello, I guess that is... Never mind. Now I'm showing my butt. Anyway, do you know what I'm saying, though? Like, so the rich looked a certain way. One, because these guys hated the rich, so they didn't make them look good. In the 1990s, Americans flaunted everything, flaunted the big cars, flaunted the jewelry, flaunted their clothes, the designer this and that, big flaunt. And in some cases, I think in LA, it's still like that. But I mean, not in places we've lived.
There is a certain subtlety to it.
That's what I'm saying. It's not flaunted anymore. It's hidden. And I think it's to preserve yourself.
Maybe.
So you don't get beaten up or, you know, no one attacks you.
Well, we all know Taylor Swift made $1 billion on her last tour. But on some level, we're like, well, yeah, maybe she deserves it. Maybe she's, you know, she's earned it. Mm-hmm. $1 billion. It's a lot of money. I mean,
but then you hear about how she gave so much money to everyone that works for her.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Like, exactly.
And they, all that is publicity as well, because they're like making it very clear, like, hey, I'm not a bad guy. Here I am spreading the wealth. You know
right.
what I'm saying? It's very strategic.
But
it's
we don't know
tactical.
What's expensed, what's not expensed, what the corporation that is Taylor Swift even looks like.
But again, it's muted. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like flaunting.
They're
it.
Controlling the narrative.
Yes, yes. So, okay. So early 2000s, class was more openly named. Regional accents, too. Like we were talking about this morning, like the very rich people in the 90s, like they had this weird accent. No matter what coast you were on, they had a weird accent that kind of separated them from other classes, you know?
Right.
Like if you look at, I mean, this would be East Coast, but like if you look at the movie Trading Places and people's names like Buffy, you know, or I'm blanking out.
And there's
now.
A little bit of a caricature, but I think it's fairly accurate.
But I went to Harvard. You know, it's like an English accent, but not an English accent. Like, what is that? It's that upper crusty accent. That doesn't exist anymore. That went away. Anyway, so regional accents, jobs, neighborhoods, they told clearer stories back then.
Yes.
It's muted now.
Yes.
People expected inequality. Like, that was it. It was just the norm. It's unequal. Oh, well. You know what I'm saying? Now it's like, even if they didn't like it, it was normal. But now it's like everything has to be equal, it feels like.
And everything.
And if it's not, then they start complaining and playing victim.
I think by and large, everything is sanitized, especially for the very wealthy, through messaging, through careful curation. You know, things like, who knows, aside from crazy people like me, Zuckerberg owns like, I think he practically owns an island in Hawaii, but he owns hundreds of acres, building a bunker, come up with a million different things to say about it. And he also is in the process of the house he has in Palo Alto. He has offers out for everybody surrounding his house that if they want to sell it, he'll buy it for like double the price or triple the price. He doesn't care, frankly, right? Mm. If they want to sell or when they choose to sell. Mm. So it's just money in the bank and he can build whatever estate that he's, you know, theoretically planning at this point. But it all sounds so reasonable and it comes out slow. Well, I'm hitting you with both of those things. I'm three things, bam, bam, bam. But there was time in between each news story.
Oh, because we're all so inundated with so many things coming at us that the absurd is now normal.
Well, the absurd is quickly replaced with another absurdity.
Yeah,
and we
absolutely.
Let it go.
Absolutely. It feels like everyone is expected to perform middle-class normalcy. Like, everybody is middle-class.
Outwardly,
like
yes.
Like, these billionaires are middle-class because they choose to dress like they're urban.
Well, Zuckerberg urban drives an Acura, don't you know?
They go around wearing hoodies. Anyway, and so debt, hustle, and exhaustion hide precarity.
Precarity?
Someone said this to me. Debt, hustle, and exhaustion hide precarity. When you're in debt, when you're constantly hustling, when you're tired, all of that is happening and you don't see the precariousness that's happening.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Is how I'm choosing
right.
to understand
you're,
what
you're,
that
you're,
means.
You're up on the high wire and you need to focus on being on the high wire.
And then, of course, social media, we have to bring that into the mix, because it flattens appearances while widening reality.
Well, they're like kids with unboxing channels, right?
Mm.
These kids aren't buying these multi-$1,000 toys that they're unwrapping and checking out. It's the parents. It's
yeah.
But at some point, it can become a self-perpetuating system. And people feel felt, I think, at one point, that was accessible. I have no idea how people feel today because, well, I stay away from most social media. But it was like, this is not the kids' channel. This is the parents' channel. Who are the parents? We don't know.
Right.
And it's, again, the same way.
Right. It makes it look like the kids were filming this.
And
like,
so,
you forget, hey, someone's filming this in a very professional way, by the way. And look at that, too, with wars. Who's filming it? Who is in there? I had a friend when I was studying photography, and She looked so innocent. I told you guys about her a long time ago, but she looked so innocent. She was so petite and so demure. And then one day, you know, we always would do projects. We wouldn't tell the class what the project was. And then we would show up on a Thursday and put up all of our prints that we worked on, you know, mm-hmm. pictures we took. So one Thursday, she puts up her prints. And so we all come into the room. We couldn't tell, like, who put what up, you know. And we were looking at these prints. We're like, oh, my God. Who photographed these? They were, like, really intimate, behind the doors, like, shut away from society, like, secret kind of photographs of what happens in a strip club, like, behind the scenes.
Wow.
Behind the scenes, like, in the dressing rooms and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Of these strippers. And guess what? My friend, the innocent-looking, very petite, very demure housewife, those were her pictures. I'm like, how did you get these pictures? How did you get into that world? She's like, I'm a stripper.
Well, okay, rock on.
Wow. Okay. You know, you wouldn't have known. But anyway, I totally digress. Why am I talking about this?
Stealth. Stealth in class. and just this flattening of. I mean, it's harder to look, listen, touch, taste, feel someone and figure out what class they're in. Mm. And everybody is trying to act just like us. People so, like us, people, you know, and that's an impossibility.
And I feel like all of this that we just talked about creates shame instead of solidarity. With my friend, I felt solidarity. I'm like, thank you for letting me into your world, you know? But like, if she hadn't, does she feel shame because she had to hide that? Like, she had this other completely different facade and a completely different life over here during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, right.
With a minivan and the kids and everything. And yet, wow, if you could see the pictures, holy moly. Anyway, so then another thing is community used to be local. Now it's fragmented. So we grew up watching community erode in real time. Churches, unions, neighborhoods, and long-term friendships, I feel like they weakened even more, like weakened, got weak. People became mobile, precarious, and isolated.
Well, yeah, right? I can just take a look. You know, I don't need to even connect with someone if I can find them on Facebook, LinkedIn,
oh,
Instagram.
So many of my friends are like, oh, I haven't talked to you in months, but it's okay because I listen to the podcast. And I laugh. I'm like, you do realize that's not my life. Like, it's not all of my, I'm making commentary about our society. You don't know anything about my day-to-day life.
To be fair, we do sometimes talk about things that just
happen.
Of course, but,
because
yeah.
We're giving real life examples. We have to, you know, we're authentic. Here we are. But they don't
But
know.
It's not totality
but
and it's not. And I want to know how you're doing. Come on.
Oh my gosh. So anyway, so belonging became transactional. It's all about networking, branding. You know, are you relevant? Ugh, I'm going to throw up.
Well, yeah, we're supposed to network and build connections. So, you know, if something weird happens And honestly, it kind of became a competition, right? Like LinkedIn. I remember when I first joined LinkedIn, everybody had 500 plus people. And I was like, ooh, I want to get to 500. And then I stopped myself and I'm like, what are you doing? Because you're just going to dilute your value.
So here's the thing. I don't really have community. And I still am feeling so sad and alone and then hypocritical because here I am with a podcast that is all about making friends, true friends that last and creating community. But here I am. In padded walls, like a crazy person, talking to myself all day.
But it's almost flattering now because it feels like it requires so much more effort to connect with people now.
It does.
To really burst through that quote-unquote noise, like, of updates, status updates and crazy news cycles and everything else. It really takes a lot to be able to sit and be still.
And this is
just talk.
And this is our solution. Talking about it and bringing it to mind so that if you are also feeling like you don't have community and you don't have support, by telling you our experience or my experience that, hey, I don't have it and I'm talking about it, this is why I'm talking about it. Just remember, if you are also feeling this way, that you have no community, although I don't have a cure that is to be implemented this very second, I do have a cure, but I don't have it to be done at this second because I need mass consciousness to keep up with us. I want you to remember that it's not a personal failure. It's a structural outcome. And I'm not playing like, woe is me. I'm not being, I don't want us to become like the victim mentality people. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
No. But just know this is what it is. It is what it is. This is how things are set up right now. And remember that so you don't feel beaten down because you don't have community. Just the mere fact that you are thinking about it and you desire it is creating community.
Right.
And also, it will happen.
And also you have to like not focus, I think, so much on appearances or any of the rest of it and just go for it. Literally, I remember, I was hanging out with our youngest and a woman walked in and I could just tell, older woman, and I could just tell she was walking her path and she didn't care, not in a way, but just in a, here I am, I'm walking my path.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the mentality. Like, it felt like if I would have gone up to her and I would have talked to her about anything, we probably would have had an interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just breaking through that inertia. And I think if I had, you know, if she had wanted to, she would have. You know what I mean? It was that kind of mentality, which is something that I'm now more striving to do. I'm in the process of building something from a raw acquaintanceship at work to something, maybe something more. Who's to say?
I think that is a combination of being soft and tough at the same time.
Exactly.
You know, no, you're not a pushover. You're not a victim. You are also open and compassionate, but
right.
You're not going to be manipulated.
But it's the same. It's almost the same mindset that would have you go up and talk to that cute girl at the bar,
or cute guy.
Hey-o.
So you know all this, and then I go back to the class system, and I was thinking, all those people that were screaming about, don't tell me what I can buy at this co-op. I'm going to go, even if I have to travel for miles and miles, I'm going to go to the big store where I can buy the 99-cent loaf of Wonder Bread. Like, don't tell me what to do, right? I feel like there's been a revolution of these people that feel unseen, all of us who feel unseen. It's been like an explosion of like, hear me now, here, you know, you have no choice but to see me now. And I feel like every, a lot of different groups and a lot of different castes within our culture, within our society in America, mm-hmm. has had that moment, like has something happened to bring to the forefront without people being able to look away to see how badly the situation is. Whether it's a Hurricane Katrina, whether it's communities that are constantly mistreated, to people that you think have money but are on food stamps and struggling, to people you think that have all that their stuff together and running the country or running big businesses, but they don't know what they're doing.
Well, they're making it up as they go, for sure.
This is a delicate subject, but like, I don't think I'm wrong. And I think that that's how Trump became so popular. Because for him, it wasn't necessarily just voting for him, but it was voting against invisibility. Of course. I mean, everyone talks about this and now. This is not news.
In a much more severe way than it was showing George Bush buying socks at Walmart. Mm. That feels quaint now.
For those of you in other countries, the president that was the candidate that was running for president back then was Bush Sr.
Right.
Was it senior or
no,
junior?
I think it was junior who owns the Texas Rangers, which is a professional baseball team.
Very wealthy, wealthy family. Very wealthy. But they showed him going to Walmart, which is where like the which is our like blue collar place to shop for daily life, food, socks, everything, right? Walmart. Right. And so he was being shown that he went to buy a pair of socks for himself. Like that's where he shops. And that was a way to manipulate people to think, oh, he's like us. He's right. One of us.
Whereas he probably has a personal shopper he would send.
Please, it was
to wherever it was he was going to send them to.
So working in lower middle class people, I feel like we're told, hey, if you're struggling, it's your fault. That pain was psychologized instead of addressed, that cultural elites spoke about them, not with them. And you disagree with me here,
right? And that's
right?
Just it. Yes, I would say that it's almost more powerful because they
they
weren't told if you're struggling it's your fault. They felt it in their
heart.
No,
honey,
they
I disagree.
Felt it.
Of course they
no,
felt
no, no,
it.
No, no, no. It's easy for me to say, well, you're wrong, F you. If somebody's coming at you and telling you something, even if it's a TV, I can turn it off. But as soon as it gets internalized, as soon as I feel it.
And here's the
through
problem.
Through a million subliminal and sublingual messaging.
100% agree with what you're saying, Matt. However, that's exactly what happened. We were being told that you're inferior, that it's your fault because you haven't gotten properly educated. You haven't gone to this university you should have gone to. And you're not going to amount to anything. And guess who told us that? It was Oprah. I remember watching Oprah. And that's the message I kept hearing from her. Be college educated. Otherwise, you'll never succeed. You'll never, 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 never. And I grew older and I was trying to support myself through college and everything. I couldn't afford to stay in college. You know, I was studying on my own. I was like busting my butt trying to succeed and learn and do everything. And here's this woman telling all these middle class women this message. And yeah, because they respected her and everybody loved her, it was emotional. It became internalized.
It became internalized. And now
it weaponized even.
And now I don't know what's going to happen because, you know, they're seeing going to university was the secret. You can earn this much more money over your lifetime.
You can rise above your class.
They're not seeing that right now.
And that's the thing. Universities, it's because things are changing so much. There's no way someone has the answers that they can teach you. You only learn by doing. And, you know, I've known so many people who barely graduated high school that became so successful and supported their families. They were amazing business people.
And sometimes it's
And I'm one of those people who is constantly, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Matt, but I'm constantly looking at YouTubes to look at interviews with billionaires and business owners that are really successful financially. And they all say, I will not have my kids going to university. My kids did not go to university. I am against that because it's a waste of money and it's a waste of time. That's now the new narrative.
And I can argue that on both sides. Both sides. I can argue that they're wrong and I can argue they're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. So it's all contingent. But I will say hustle can win. But, you know, we're getting away from, we're talking about almost like the breakdown of society as opposed to, or the breakdown of the class system. As opposed to, you know, friendship.
I mean, that's part of friendship because here you are now stuck in the middle of all this, trying to survive. Who has time for friendship? Who has the capacity to be compassionate, to be like grounded and like, let me listen to you. Hi, how you doing today? No, you're in fight or flight mode. And I think this is what's helped to contribute to loneliness.
Yes.
And contribute to feeling like you can't even talk to someone.
I'll absolutely agree with that. However, it feels like we should, and this is where it all gets precarious, right? But it feels like we should be able to listen. Not solution, but listen. And let people talk. Just let people talk.
And I've noticed if I let people talk, I don't have to talk because they're feeling like what I'm feeling. So in listening to them,
right,
I'm like, oh, you did my work for me. And I can say, same.
But sometimes you just have to get something out. And I've noticed this for years. Every once in a while, somebody will have a conversation with me where they just needed a warm body in the room. And sometimes, and fortunately, it doesn't happen very often, but it does happen. I need a warm body in the room. And somebody's just going to listen to whatever it is I have to say, smile and nod, and we'll both move on. And they'll be like, okay, Matt's a little more crazy than I thought. And that's fine. Because again, you know, it's the thick skin compassionate.
So can we go back to living in the cracks? I feel like because things have been so fragmented, there are so many cracks, now we're all in the cracks. And you can't, it's hard to like come up and go, hey, you know what I'm saying? You're in a crack. Mm-hmm. So it feels like, doesn't it feel like when you're in the crack that you can see multiple worlds? You're straddling different cultures, different situations, right?
Yes.
So you can see multiple situations, multiple worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you don't fully belong to any single one as far as like connecting with one another. And then the ones that notice that they're in the cracks and everything and feel this are brave enough to say, you know what? I don't have a lot of friends. I don't have community. Like brave enough to admit it, because usually like people feel like it's their fault. And so they feel shame.
And as a victim.
That they don't have either that or they just feel like something's wrong with me. I caused it. It's my fault. No, it's my fault.
I know. Victim.
Victim is you did this to me. That's how I see it.
I see a victim as something was done to me.
Right. That's a victim. I'm saying I did this to myself because I don't fit in. You know what I mean? I didn't study hard enough.
Point.
I didn't work hard enough.
Point.
I didn't go out the way I should have, or I didn't pursue this or that. So, but oftentimes these people that are sensitive to that and see that and acknowledge that within themselves, those are the translators, the artists, the listeners, the podcasters. And I was told the bridges. And here's what my friend said to me, because he said, you're a bridge. You know, you may feel like you don't have community, but like with your everything that you're doing, your writing, all of that, you're a bridge. And he said, guess what? Bridges get walked on. And translators are rarely thanked and listeners are rarely held. That's the hidden cost of your kind of sensitivity. That's true.
And again, it feels like what you're saying is give people the space to talk. Just listen, right? Because fortunately or unfortunately, everybody wants to be right. Everybody wants to be, you know, smarter and better, because it makes us feel good is maybe a stretch, but it makes us feel less bad to be that person who is right, who is smart, who is strong, who knows something. And sometimes just communicating, we call it rubber ducking. Mm-hmm. We want a rubber duck in the room. We want to explain what we've done to the rubber duck because maybe we can figure out what the problem is and then we can fix it. But I don't want you to talk. I just want you going, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, I understand, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Weird world. Oh, I could tell a story out of school. You ready for me to tell you a story out of school? In college.
Make it quick though, babe. This has been a long episode.
In college, met a girl. Things got interesting. Sorry, baby. Sorry, baby. She had something she wanted to say. And I was like, okay. And she was like, I don't know if I could say it to you. And I was like, really? So now I'm intrigued. And then I was like, she was studying Italian and she could speak Italian. I was like, well, go ahead and tell it to me in Italian and I will just listen and I will be attentive and I will nod and I will have no idea what you were saying. And so she did. And I, to this day, no idea. It's not like I could pick out, you know, any word in there, not even know. Which is, and she probably cut it up so I couldn't figure that out. But who's to say?
And why did she do that?
Something important. She just had to enter into the room, you know? Yeah, and honestly, the whole thing fizzled out shortly thereafter, and I got the feeling there was other forces at work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But whatever. It's not important. This was so many years ago. It's not even funny. It was just a weird moment in time. But that's when I understood, that's when I started to understand, I think, the value of just having someone in the room listening.
Yeah.
Regardless of what you're saying, regardless of them not even understanding what you're saying, is valuable.
So can we talk about why all this hurts so much and our work here with this podcast? We're not just talking about friendship. You know, we actually believe in it as a force for repairing our society, repairing our relationships, repairing even our economy. We talked about this in the very beginning when I got a grant to do this friendship movement. Part of what I was saying is it directly impacts our economy, and I made a case of why and how we can fix it. So realizing I don't have the safety net that I advocate for, and the feeling that I have is betrayal, exposure, and a quiet, what did I do wrong? How come I don't have friends? Like, I don't have a bad personality. I'm compassionate, whatever, you know, like, what did I do wrong? And if you're feeling like me, the answer is a gentle nothing. You didn't do anything wrong. We're responding sanely to an insane structure at the moment. It is what it is. And we build friendship by building a soft spot in our hearts while still walking with power. Like that lady that you saw in the coffee shop.
Right. Right. And I would actually go back to a concept that I used to love bringing up, and I still do, which is the inner Popeye. We have to get out of our own way and just don't worry about it so much.
And going back to the class system, it hasn't disappeared. It's become harder to name, I think on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Community didn't fail. We're living through its dismantling. Think about how that's happening. And then going back to when I started talking to you about like self-soothing, I don't think that's weakness. It's adaptive intelligence. You know, do whatever you can to feel good in a healthy way with balance, of course. I know this probably doesn't sound like, if someone who doesn't know us comes to our podcast right now today, like we probably sound so cynical, but I feel like we're discerning. Do you disagree?
I'm not going to fight you on that. But be bold.
But there is something that is there. There is something out there. And before I tell you what that something is, please hear me when I say, if you feel like you're holding yourself together alone, you and I are a community. We are a community. There is a community out there. We are it. So let's explore the micro community that quietly exists. A micro community is belonging at a human scale, not an audience, not a following, not a network, not a group chat or a place where you have to perform and have stability or success. A micro community is made of small, real, repeatable movements of mutual recognition. It could be 2 to 5 people, sometimes even just one. No formal name. No mission statement, no promise of permanence, very low expectations, and a surprisingly high emotional impact. It doesn't say, we are a community. It says, I see you. And the reason why micro community matters right now, especially when money is tight, time is fragmented, and safety feels abstract, large scale community becomes inaccessible. Micro community serves because it requires less energy, It tolerates unevenness. It doesn't punish inconsistency. It allows people to come as they are. This is the number three friend we've been talking about this whole time. It's how humans have always survived collapse. Quietly, rationally, without branding it. It exists even when it feels like you have nothing. None of it. Some examples. There's the witness relationship. Someone who knows your real circumstances, doesn't try to fix them, doesn't disappear because of them. Again, these are definitions of the number three friend. The friend that just loves you for who you are. This is what we've been talking about since 2020. It might be one friend who checks in without urgency. Someone who listens more than they talk. Someone you don't see that often. But when you do, you're real. This is community, even if it's only one person. For me, sometimes it's a bird that keeps visiting us that we've named Eric. Literally comes within an inch of me and just hangs out with me, follows me in the yard, you guys. Amazing. Makes me cry. The rhythmic familiar. There are people you see repeatedly without intimacy pressure. The barista who knows your order. The librarian, the yoga teacher, the fellow parent you nod to each week, you know. They regulate the nervous system because they say, hey, you exist. You are expected. That's not small. That's anchoring. And then there's the mutual care loop. This is subtle but powerful. You hold space for someone. They hold space for you. Not equally, not symmetrically, but sincerely. It may not feel like support because it isn't dramatic, but it is stabilizing. And if you look, you can probably find some sort of a shared language bond. Sometimes community is not proximity, it's resonance. People who understand your metaphors, get your sensitivity, don't ask you to simplify your inner world. Micro community begins when one of those resonant relationships becomes reciprocal, even lightly. There's also that friend that doesn't demand, that we don't demand friendship. This one is sacred. These are relationships where silence isn't punished, absence isn't interrogated, financial strain doesn't disqualify you, being unsure is allowed. They often survive because they don't ask for proof of worth. The micro community is hard to see when you're tired or grieving because it doesn't announce itself. So because we've been taught, community looks like gatherings. That support looks like resources. And belonging looks like being chosen loudly, right? Micro community is quieter than that. It's more like shared breathing. So you may not have structural community, financial buffered community, institutional belonging, but we do have threads, and threads can be woven slowly, imperfectly, without forcing them into rope. That's it for me. My lecturing for this week.
Fair enough. Good stuff. Really, really good stuff in there.
And again, all this because I've been feeling, aside from my immediate family and some good friends out there, but they don't really know what's going on with me because, you know, I'm too ashamed to say, hey, I'm really struggling over here. I don't want to say anything because I don't want it held against me, you know? I don't want them to think of me as some weak victim or something. So I'm like, you know what? Let me just move through it. And if someday I tell them what was happening, maybe I'll tell them. But like, I just feel alone. So this is a reminder mainly for myself. But I hope that it touches you. And if you're feeling like I am, I hope this helps.
Fair. Love you, sweetie.
Love you. Love you guys.
Be well, everyone.
Have a beautiful every day. Talk to you in a few days.